This is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio. When photographer John Rosenthal traveled to New Orleans on vacation in 2007, he had an image in his mind of what Hurricane Katrina had done to that city, but he was surprised at what he actually saw in the Lower Ninth Ward. Contrary to the images that he had seen on television and in newspapers, he found the community to be not one in chaos, but at a standstill. He began documenting the small, intimate details of everyday living in the Lower Ninth. His photographs are featured in a new book called After, The Silence of the Lower Ninth Ward. John Rosenthal joins me now. Welcome back, John.
Thank you, Frank.
What did you go? You went to New Orleans. How did you end up going there? This is a couple of years after Katrina.
It was about a year and a half. And I went to New Orleans. My wife and I went to New Orleans because we wanted to take a vacation. And people said, well, take your tourist dollars and spend it in New Orleans because they need the money. And it was true. There were only a handful of restaurants that were opened outside of the French Quarter. So we went down, and a friend drove us out to see the breaches around town, and we went to the Lower Ninth Ward. And I think it might be suggest a limitation on my imagination because I don't know what I expected. Everything you heard about the Lower Ninth Ward was that it was associated with poverty and gangsters, and it was supposed to be the worst slum in New Orleans. And I got there, and I saw a square mile of brick bungalows just sitting there in silence. And the first thing I said was, "This can't be the Lower Ninth. I don't know what I had imagined."
It's a tough thing because, you know, it's a year and a half later, so clearly there wasn't much going on, right? I mean, they were still rebuilding, and yet those images that we saw, you know, get etched in your mind, and you can't bring yourself to realize that that's not what's happening now. You know, it sort of washed those images from your mind.
That's right. And, of course, right after the flood, there were 10,000 photographers who went into the Lower Ninth because debris was piled a mile high, and cars were in trees, and a lot of cars, houses had floated off their foundations. It was very dramatic, but by the time I got there, it was quiet.
Yeah.
There was nothing going on. And so, you know, the first thing I noticed when I was in the Lower Ninth was that there were signs everywhere that people had loved their neighborhood. And that surprised me because it was a who were the people who loved their neighborhood? Kids, mothers, grandparents, father, people who went to church. And so I began to photograph those signs. Yes, those intimate signs.
Intimate signs and small objects.
Very small.
What was that? Is that something that's always been interesting to you, or was that particularly interesting when you got to the Ninth Ward?
No, it was something that has been interesting to me ever since I began to be a photographer. I went to New York, and I was just learning how to do it. I went to New York, and I was fascinated by the bread in Jewish bakeries. I was fascinated by seltzer water bottles in the back of old delivery trucks. You know, guys playing backgammon, Ukrainian guys playing backgammon. All of these things were interesting to me. They were small New York. What I didn't realize is that everything I was photographing was about to disappear. And that's what's interesting to me about my own history, is that I seem to be drawn to memorializing loss even before it happened.
But this is interesting now. You're more mature when you go to the Ninth Ward. You have the memory and experience of that, the fact that what you thought could go on forever, a backgammon game between two Ukrainian men, is a passing scene, and now you take that experience and that understanding with you to a place like New Orleans. Were you sort of conscious of that role as maybe documenting a passing scene?
Yes. I mean, in New York, I certainly was aware of it when I, over the years, watched some of my favorite places disappear. Mm. But when I got to the Lower Ninth, I was aware of the fact that I had a trained eye, and I could actually see small things, like a wrought iron fence that surrounded a dead garden. But the fence was beautiful, even though the paint was peeled off of it. And I just thought, well, you know, this is something I see. Will it be interesting as a response to the lower ninth? Will it in some way challenge that huge classification that the media used when they talked about the citizens of the lower ninth and the lower ninth in general, which, by the way, was a very poor neighborhood, but most of the people who lived there were very devoted to that neighborhood.
Several of the photographs you took are from a local elementary school. Tell us about it.
Yeah, I think that's the kind of heart of the book. The photographs, like it's a photograph of this is all taken in the Louis Armstrong Elementary School, which had been open 2 days before the flood arrived. And so I'm in kindergarten classes and I'm looking at a calendar where the kids are learning the days of the week. There's a big sign on the wall that says literacy. Mm. I mean, it was just, the passion to educate. You really feel it in a kindergarten classroom. And I wanted those photographs to suggest just the opposite of everything that I'd ever heard about the lower ninth. I wanted it to suggest, this was the heart of a society. This is where kids were getting educated. They were learning how to be American, how to know how to function in the world. And I wanted the photographs to kind of hum with that lost life.
The church photographs as well, the pews with the American flag and the debris on the floor and the aftermath of the flood. Tell us more about that photo.
Well, that was an irresistible photograph. You walk in and there is this church the floors are still so muddy. And it was underwater for weeks, the church. And there's a flag on the pew. And, it was a very beautiful image, but that also was part of the problem of photographing the lower ninth, is that you didn't want to suggest that beauty triumphed over tragedy. Mm. Because that happens a lot when people photograph a tragedy. They look for
redemption.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, tell me more about that. Let's stay there for a while. You're an outsider. You come into this place. You are not part of the culture. And now you're going to, I mean, there's also a claim and sometimes a charge that photographers and outsiders will come in and exploit this situation. Are you conscious of that? Are you aware of that when you go in?
Very much so. In fact, it was, the force that withheld me more than any other. But I just thought, look, I'm not trying to say something that I can't say. I can look at something, a railing. I can look at a church pew. I can feel that that's a kind of evidence. It's a kind of metaphor. I'm okay with that. What I wouldn't be okay with would be to photograph a resident of the Lower Ninth Ward to try to claim his sorrow, to make use of it in a book. I hardly ever photograph people anymore for that reason. I think photographs claim much too much.
You capture the spirit of the, as many sort of folks would say, if you've taken my soul when you take my picture.
Well, I wrote an article years ago called Stealing Souls, and it was about my growing realization that if you were going to photograph a person, you needed to do it very honorably.
So let's talk about that, the role of the media, any mediator, whether you take the role as an artist or as a reporter and you're going in, there is a role for an outsider. An outside eye has a place, and a report from someone not of the place is valid and useful. On the other hand, we do need to hear voices from within, the subjective voices. How do you see that role, and how conscious, what does that do for us, and how do you discipline yourself going into a situation like that?
Well, keep in mind that when I began to photograph in the Lower Ninth Ward, I looked everywhere to see if there were other people photographing it. I was especially someone from the community. I went there 5 or 6 times in the course of a year. And I encountered one photographer, and that was about a 22-year-old kid from Minnesota on a bicycle. And so I realized that this particular story, this real small story, as opposed to the spectacle that had occurred after the flood, this small story was territory that I inhabited. I seemed to be the only one doing it. Honestly, if I had come across an African-American photographer who was working that territory, I wouldn't have continued with the project. It just wasn't mine. But it didn't seem like anybody else was doing it. And, you know, it's years later, it turned out that I probably was the one photographer who went there and, you know, as a professional, as an artist, who went there and continued with the project. I'm sure there's lots of other photographs.
And when you say that territory, you're not talking about the geographic territory, but you mean the small objects, the subjects that you chose. And the fact is that there are no people on these.
Yes. I didn't feel that the work that I was doing was intrusive on any level.
Well, at another level, too, I mean, obviously the politics of Katrina are so dense that you have to discuss it and think about it whenever you talk about it in any format, on any platform. But there is another side to these photos, the sheer artistic value of some of them, that capture the raw dynamics of something as powerful as Katrina and all of its velocity, captured in the stillness of these photos. So you see the effects of the drama. You see the effects of the velocity, but they are dead still in these photos.
Yes. The photograph that's on the cover of the book, which is of a Lowry organ that I came across in the Church of the Living God, it was underwater for weeks at a time. And so when you look at it, you wonder, you know, you think it's veneer that is these little discs all over the organ. You think it's the veneer of the organ until you realize that it's actually silt, and that when the water receded and the church to some extent dried out, that silt turned into these little sort of beautiful discs on the organ. But that the organ itself hummed with its secret metaphorical life. It referred to music. It referred to a congregation. I mean, if it didn't do that, I wouldn't have taken the photograph. But I felt that, and of course, that has to do with the fact that, you know, I've been taking photographs for a long time, and I can sort of sense the hum of a metaphor underneath an object.
This one has so much light playing off of it and so much texture that you can see that and feel that at first glance. This one is interesting in another way because it has that hum, but not so apparent the first time. I mean, it's a very sort of bland-looking subject, and yet it is, the more time you spend with it, your eye just can't go away.
Yeah, it's Fats Domino's garage door. and if you look closely at it, first of all, you can see the wonderful colors that was associated with Fats Domino's house and his business down in the Lower Ninth. But if you look, you see the strange buckling of the garage door. And you look even closer, you see the various levels of the receding water, where they stopped for a week and where they went down. And so it is a very bland photograph, but the closer you look,
that's right,
the darker it becomes.
You know, there's amazing drama in that photo, especially that little bit. Can you think about the power of the storm? And then there's a garage door with a little buckling in the bottom panel. And
you think, well, thank you for noticing that.
Oh, yeah. No. And on up it goes. You have taken these photographs. Again, we talked about these being in 2007. You've got this beautiful book out now. What are you working on these days, John?
Well, I'm writing. I've always been a writer, but my career path, I guess you could call it.
It's only a path when you look back, isn't it, John?
Exactly.
Don't you think
that?
So? Yeah.
It's just when you look back. Right. But I certainly wanted to be a writer before I wanted to be a photographer. Yeah. But it turned out to be different. I'm writing a book at this point. It's a strange memoir that is about one event that occurred in my life, and how that how my thinking about that transformed over a 50-year period. And that was the suicide of a friend of mine when she was 21 and I was 22. Now, is that a memoir? Mm-hmm. It sounds like it's more of a meditation, but yeah. I hope it has enough energy to be a decent book.
And you reflect on the different ways that you've thought about that and looked at that over the decades that have passed.
You know, when you're 22 and you have a friend that commits suicide, you might think, well, that's an act of defiance. I am an artist and the world doesn't understand me. And I did think that. But over time, you know, as friends of mine, I've seen their children become ill around the same age that Amy, when she suddenly changed. So you have, you know, you just have these different decade-by-decade transformations of your thought. And I think it's fabulously interesting. The question, of course, is it going to be interesting in a book?
Well, we'll find out and have you back when the rest of the world agrees with you. John Rosenthal, a photographer. His new book is After the Silence of the Lower Ninth Ward. Thanks, John. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Frank.
You can find out more about the book and anything about our show at our website, stateofthings.org, which is a program produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Will Michaels, Charlie Shelton, and Andrew Tai. Robin Copley is our technical director. Al Wodarski sitting in today. Brent Wolf, WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.